with John Shannon. I'm Bob McCown, and this is the Bob McCown Podcast, interestingly enough.
That's featuring, a good name.
Featuring John Shannon. Oh, yeah. We should actually change the name of this show to the Claude and Orris the Malfichuk Show. That's what we should do.
We can do that for next April 1st. What do you think? We'll do it for one day next April 1st.
Well, if the audience wasn't as good as it is, I'd change it right now. But I'm afraid we'd...
How do you spell the Malfichuk?
Oh, I can spell it for you.
Okay.
I have to write it down, though. Hang on.
T-H-E-M-A-L-T-H-E. I thought it was T-H-A.
No, T-H-E.
Okay.
M-A-L-F-A-C-H-U-C-K.
Oh, a C-K at the end, not just U-K.
Well, I want it to sound reasonably North American, so I put Chuck at the end of it. You want me to spell Claude and Orist for you too?
No, I know Claude and I know an Orist, so I'm okay.
Orist Kinderchuk, right?
Orist Kinderchuk and Claude Lazelle. There you go.
Well, there are a few Claudes out there, you know.
Yeah. Claude Lemieux.
I was just going to go there.
Yeah. But I don't know any Malfichuk.
Claude Austin. Remember him?
Oh, sure. Yeah, ended up
for the Dodgers, I think.
Left-handed pitcher for the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
And actually ended up being a pretty good pitching coach too, didn't he? I think he did. For the Dodgers.
You might be right.
They actually, if I remember as a kid, they were all, when Sandy Koufax retired a billion years ago.
Sandy Koufax retired?
Just, and Marilyn Bell hit the break wall. When Sandy Koufax retired, the Dodgers were hyping Claude Osteen as his replacement. That, oh, Osteen's going to be the next Koufax.
Nobody was going to be the next Koufax.
No, I know, but you know how teams hype things.
Was Koufax the best pitcher you ever saw? I mean, you probably only saw him in film.
I did watch a few Sunday, or, you know, a few World Series when he was still pitching, and I watched and the great Saturday afternoon baseball game. You know, he was on every once in a while.
Koufax against Marichal was about, you can't get any better than that.
And I was a Giants fan. So as a kid, I loved the Giants. I'll tell you what, Bob Gibson.
Well, yeah, you can't throw him out.
The thing you measured with Gibson, and even in reading and watching about him in the last three or four decades, Koufax, you could not see his competitive level. Like, Koufax was just cool as a cucumber.
Yep.
You know, Gibson, you saw. Oh, Gibson. I mean, it was tangible. He was vicious. Viciously
would
competitive.
Throw it through your ear.
Yeah. And you could see it in his eyes. You could see it in his face. Koufax was, he was Mr. Freeze, right?
Yep.
Gibson wore it on his sleeve every time he went to the mound. So anyway, there's our history lesson for the day.
I don't know how we got on this, but we better get off it because we have a guest. And we are going to talk baseball, although I imagine not much about Juan Marichal, Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, or Claude Austin. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet will join us when we come back after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you. Well, we have spent some time over the last few months addressing the end of the baseball season and where the Toronto Blue Jays will go from here, regardless of...
No, not the end of the baseball season, the end of the Blue Jays season.
Well, yes. Well, which essentially
that's not the end of the baseball season. It is not. Last night's baseball game, as I said, it was fantastic.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah, man.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean. You know, we have dabbled in the, well, what comes next? You've got a... three or four guys that you've got to make decisions on. Your future is in the balance. And arguably all of these guys are integral pieces that you would like to keep. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet joins us to chat a little bit about this. Is the road any clearer now than it was a month ago, 2 months ago, in your opinion, Shai?
No, I don't think so at all. And there are several factors muddling it to some degree, including the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement, which is sort of the elephant in the room that nobody really wants to acknowledge right now. But, you know, I think that's going to factor into the Blue Jays thinking, and that's going to factor into how the market behaves. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I think everybody's curious to see where the bidding is going to go on Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray, and, you know, to a bit of a lesser extent on Steven Matz. But, you know, the way that, if I'm thinking about this team, you know, the goal for them is not to be one game better so they can get into the wild card, right? That's not the goal. You have to figure out, they have to figure out, where is the gap that the Tampa Bay Rays finished 9 games ahead of them in the standings. And what's interesting to me is if you look at the runs for and runs against, I mean, they're almost the same, right? They're very, very similar, but somehow there are 9 games that disappear. Now, I think it's easy to just say, oh, that's bullpen alone, but like every team is going to have some blips. You know, if you look at the totality of the season, the Blue Jays bullpen isn't the disaster that everybody would think it is. You know, where do they pick up that ground? Is it execution? Is it deployment? Is it planning? Is, you know, is it personnel? You know, how do they close that gap? Because that's really where they got to get to. You don't want to go to that one game coin flip, right? You know, the Dodgers win 106 games, you know, and they're sweating bullets to just get by into the DS. And now they've got the, you know, 107 win Giants waiting for them. You know, you've got to get into the division. You got to win your division. And so I think that's the overriding question for the Blue Jays. And I think there's some ideas, but I don't think there are answers just yet.
Well, in a generic sense, we always say that pitching matters more than anything else.
Sure.
And by that criteria, you would put Ray as the number one priority. Matt's probably the number two priority. And Semien, in spite of having this amazing season, and everybody falling in love with this guy, justifiably, probably number three in the priority list. Do you subscribe to that theory?
I do not.
Okay.
You know, for me, if I'm spending my money in one spot, if I have to pick one of those three guys, I'm picking Marcus Semien. You know, the description I had, and this is from someone with another club, described him as a unicorn's unicorn. Right. This is somebody that you're just not getting. I think even internally, there are some Blue Jays people who will tell you that, you know, as great a season as Vladdy Guerrero Jr. had, you know, Semien was really that team's MVP. He was the backbone, especially during some of the down periods for this team. And, you know, I think that if he ends up leaving, you know, what he will leave behind will be an enduring gift to this Blue Jays organization in terms of the type of processes that guys learned, routines, determination, things of that nature. But if you could still keep it, you'd prefer it. And, you know, that would certainly solve a need. But, you know, the way that I look at it is that, you know, the Blue Jays had obviously the best production from second base in the major leagues this past year, the highest OPS. But they were 21st in OPS at third base. And what if you leveled that off and you got better at, you got much better at third, and you took a bit of a hit at second, you got a couple switch hitters or left-handed hitters into both those spots. Are you better? Maybe. Right. So I think that those are some of the discussions that the Blue Jays are having right now in terms of, you know, like, what can we do in those spots? How can we figure that out? And then, you know, you've got to attack the bullpen. You've got to bolster 2/5 of the rotation. As you mentioned, Bob, you know, that's, and then the other factor that doesn't get talked about as much is that, you know, one of the reasons that one of the things beyond the obvious production that made Semien, Ray, and Matz so valuable is that they gave the Blue Jays very, very financially efficient production, right? It was, they were a combined 13.5 wins of value. And that was for $31.2 million on the free agent market. I mean, that is unheard of almost. So, you know, that's aside from having to replace the production, they have to replace the financial efficiency because other parts of the roster are naturally becoming more expensive.
But that would, but truthfully, that was the risk both sides, particularly Ray and Semien, took, right?
Oh, sure, sure. 100%. And that's not, you know, like, I mean, Matz was in his final year of arbitration coming off a disaster season, and good for him. You know, he's positioned himself very well in the free agent market, to the point, I don't think they will, but to the point that the Blue Jays could at least realistically kick around, you know, should they give him a qualifying offer. You know, Ray Ray was coming off another mess of a season, right? And that was a gamble on both sides. And, you know, I think you looked at it, you know, the Blue Jays were like, okay, if we can just get 150 decent innings out of him, the Blue Jays would have been happy if Robbie Ray turned into Steven Matz, the 2021 sure. Steven Matz.
Yeah, agreed.
Instead, they nearly got 2021 Garrett Cole. So, you know, obviously that worked out great. And, you know, I think Simeon was a bit more of a sure bet, but, you know, and it was a more substantial commitment, you know, $18 million. On a one-year deal, but it was very much a prove-it deal, and it was like, hey, 60 games last year was an aberration. I was playing through an oblique injury, and you saw my real production in the playoffs. And then the regular season happens, and that's exactly how it played out. So you're right, John, that there was risk on both sides. But again, you know, everything broke the Blue Jays' way. And, you know, obviously the players are going to get the reward this year. And the Blue Jays got a significant discount on that level of production last year.
In listening to Ross yesterday, how much of the priority beyond the players, how much is hitting from the left side?
You know, I started hearing conversations about this, you know, back in July, where the Blue Jays were looking at it. And, you know, two names that they did look at around the trade deadline, and made runs at, I don't know how far this got, but, you know, they made a push for Jose Ramirez from Cleveland, and they made a push for Robbie Grossman with the Tigers. I don't think the Tigers engaged much at all on that. But, you know, the both switch hitters who would have provided them protection, you know, quality at bats, guys who give you, you know, a combination of, you know, batting average and on-base percentage, obviously, you know, Jose Ramirez is the total package. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of an insight into what they'd like to get in an ideal world. You know, but is it going to be an ideal world? Probably not. You know, I think the Blue Jays will have to, you know, at minimum, they'll have options to get left-handed. And I think the challenge for them is that, you know, do you want to take a left-handed hitter who you think is maybe a bit lesser than a right-handed option just for the sake of, you know, having that platoon balance? Or, you know, do you fall on the side of the best player? And so, you know, last year they clearly fell on the latter part. And I think this year maybe they'll, you know, just opt for the left-handedness a little bit more.
I don't disagree with a word you've said. You know, the acknowledgement that pitching is harder to come by. And when you get good starting pitching, it's really the last thing you want to give up. Having said that, I agree on Semien. Irrespective of what's coming in the system, because is there something imminent? I don't think there is at second base. Is there?
Yeah, there's no one coming that's imminent. You know, Otto Lopez made some nice gains this year, but I don't think you're ready to hand him the everyday job. You know, Jordan Groshans is probably going to open next season at AAA, but, you know, he didn't have the, you know, light it up kind of season that I think the Blue Jays were hoping for from him. And then, you know, Kevin Smith is there, but again, are you ready to commit the everyday job to any of those three guys? And then, you know, Kevin Biggio is there as well. But, you know, for the time being, I think the Blue Jays' preference is for him to end up in a super utility role, or, you know, to be there in case there's an injury and, you know, that you need to backfill for an extended period of time. So, you know, there are some internal options, but, you know, I think the Blue Jays are clearly trying to get better there than what they have right now.
Well, then that leaves you with the potential of losing Matz and Ray to not just starting pitchers, but two good starting pitchers. And the dilemma you face there is that pitchers do not grow on trees. And while you want Semien's offense, is it not true that you may be able to work around not having Semien's offense easier than missing out on 20 wins and good starts 2 out of 5 times?
I mean, that's certainly a consideration, but you have to also keep in mind that it's no guarantee that they come back and do the exact same thing that they did this past year, right? Like, there's volatility in performances with both those guys, particularly with Matz, but also to a degree with Ray. And then part of this is, you know, what's Nate Pearson? And, you know, right now the Blue Jays, I don't think are even sure what, you know, Nate Pearson is. And, you know, they're thinking about him in a number of different ways. you know, they still want him to be on a starter and to get back on a starter trajectory. But it's been a long time since he's hauled it 100 innings in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the longer that you don't do it, to suddenly think that, all right, well, you've been running sprints your whole life, you know, now you can, or you've been running sprints for several years, you can jump back in and do the marathon right now.
Yeah.
That's not really fair. So, you know, I think, you know, among the things they're talking about right now is, you know, can they get Nate Pearson into some sort of hybrid starter role? You know, think about maybe the way the Rays used Luis Patino, you know, somebody who's extended innings and extended work, but not, you know, the traditional sort of starter. That may be one way for them to attack it with him. And what does that mean for the others? You know, the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the Blue Jays can go out there and try to find another Mats and another Ray. And it's not the easiest thing to do, but you've got Berríos as well in-house. So you're starting from a better point right now than you were at last year. And that gives you perhaps a bit of flexibility where you can think about the 26-man group in totality. And instead of saying, you know, we have to replace part A with a similar part A.
Yeah. I want to talk about team performance in a second, but you just tweaked me to something about Pearson. Were you surprised yesterday that you, when Ross said may not need surgery?
I wasn't, because that had been the conversation for,
okay,
you know, a couple months. It was like, let's see how he does and whether he recovers from it. And, you know, sports hernias are notoriously difficult to diagnose and sometimes difficult to treat. They don't always need that. But, you know, I wonder if when push comes to shove, you know, just because it's a big dude, there's a lot of violence and power in that delivery, even though he's got good mechanics, you know, do they just, you know, does he end up fixing it so it doesn't pop up in some way, shape or form next year? But it doesn't surprise me that they were at least kicking that around, because, you know, even at the time, you know, from the moment they discovered it was a sports hernia, that they figured that, you know, this is something that they may not need to repair surgically.
Yeah, and you touched on, you know, Semien career year, Romano career year, but we can't forget in all this, Guerrero career year, Hernandez career year, Bichette career year, you know, pick another guy. I mean, even, you know, Alejandro Kirk career year. I mean, the thought that everybody is going to continue on the same arc next year is one that next year may be a letdown, don't you think?
I mean, potentially, but I'm of the opinion, and, you know, a lot of people seem to share it, that, you know, Guerrero and Bichette are just getting going, right? They're like, Bichette's going to be better than he was this year. You know, he's at least
defensively.
And offensively, like, he's going to get better and smarter and, you know, have a better understanding of what he needs to attack and, you know, how he needs to attack. Like, you know, I just think that they may dip next year because, you know, players' career trajectories rarely are in a linear straight line. You know, they're up back and forth.
That's Marcus Semien.
Right. But the thing is, it's like, if you have a sufficient base of talent, you know, that you have other guys to protect against the ups and downs. And so, you know, Danny Jansen should be better. Mm-hmm. You know, Nate, you should get more out of Nate Pearson. You should be getting more out of, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. over a full season. You know, you're going to have George Springer for potentially, you know, 150, 160 games this year.
Hopefully.
Right. This year, you got less than half a year out of him. So, you know, I think that's some of the back and forth that you get. And then you bring in some other guys and, you know, you expect them to perform, which should insulate you from that. But at the same time, volatility of performance is a reality. And, you know, to expect, you know, the Blue Jays had a lot of things break their way this year, like a lot of things break their way. And, you know, that is part of what makes this such a difficult missed opportunity. You know, and you look back at it, you know, you think about those bullpen losses in May and June. There are two stretches where it was just ghastly. You know, they lost, you know, two different stretches. They lost 8 games in the final at bat, you know, and I think 3 or 4 others in either the 7th or 8th inning because of your bullpen. You know, I mean, that's your division right there. That's not just the wild card spot. That's the American League East. So
there are, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I mean, that's part of what they have to figure out. So like, how do you tighten it up? Because you don't necessarily replicate everything that you had this year.
With Shai Davidi, there are statistics for everything. And if anybody knows those statistics, you would. I'm going to guess that there's probably not a player in Major League Baseball that got himself into more 0-2 counts than Bichette. Does that seem like a reasonable observation to you?
There was a point in the season, I didn't track it towards the end, but there was a point in the season when he was leading MLB in that. And look, you know, I mean, if that is who he is, and I don't have a problem with it. I know some people do, but I want him doing exactly what he does. You know, I think that over time he'll become a little bit more selective and he'll learn to rein it in. But he keeps opposing pitchers on their toes. Like, you cannot go in there and just think I'm going to lazily steal a strike, because he'll send it right back over your head.
Well, and I think the point you're making here is, as we saw, you know, he gets into this over and over again. It gets into 0-2 counts, usually by swinging and missing, not by taking pitches. And then they start throwing him sliders on the outside, and he manages to find a way to foul off four or five before, you know, putting the ball in play. So I don't disagree with you, but it just seems like an obvious place where, with a little bit more experience and a little bit of attention to it, he could put himself in better counts where he can get better pitches.
I think so too, but you know, again, I also do think that what he's establishing around the league to pitchers is like, you better come in ready, and you don't get to like lay one in there and just steal yourself a strike. Like, you know, that, and I think that's important too, because pitchers understand that, and that impacts how they attack them. So they realize that, you know, if they're going to be anywhere around the middle of the plate, you know, that he's going to be going after it.
And it makes you wonder if his dad had the same issue.
Yeah, I mean, his dad was a little bit different, but like, the one thing about both of them, which I think is a key consistency, is that both of them are really comfortable hitting with two strikes. You know, and one thing that the Blue Jays did this year, Bob and John, that's really important, you know, like, they really cut down on their strikeouts. You know, they were a tough team to strike out in a strikeout era. And because of that, you know, I know that sort of the approach has been, you know, a big discussion point, but to me, it's more an issue of balance. And like, if you can get a couple more left-handed hitters in there, if you get a bit more left-right balance, you know, what that does is that it prevents, you know, a guy from getting into a groove. You know, I talked to one pitcher this season. I said, hey, like, you know, if you're in a lineup and you're just like facing a long run of righties and you can kind of sort of attack them in a similar way, you know, does that help you as opposed to when there's left-handed hitters and you have to sort of change your approach periodically in the lineup because you've got a variety of hitter? And he said, yeah, it's like when you get in a groove, you can find your mechanics and sort of like you just find this flow. Whereas like, you know, if you're having to put different pitches and you're really having to challenge your sequencing and things of that nature, you know, that can disrupt you a little bit. So, you know, that's one element that could potentially play in the Blue Jays' favor. You know, that's if you can add a little bit more of, you know, sort of force the other team to have different game plans and sort of just put more on their plate to manage while they're on while the pitcher and catcher are working together, you know, that can be advantageous. And so these are the sort of the finer points where, you know, before the Blue Jays were really just focused on talent accumulation, whereas now it's sort of, you know, okay, how do you refine and complement what's already in place?
With Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, we'll take the break and come back with more after these messages. It's McCowan and Shannon, it's Davidi on the program today. One of the places that is uncertain, one of the positions, and maybe the only position that's really uncertain, is third base. And yet, the more I watch Espinal play and the more I see him perform, the more I like him. And yet, traditional baseball people have pigeonholed him, for lack of a better term, as a utility guy. That's what he is and who he is. In your opinion and based on your observations, do they need to look for an upgrade at third base?
Yes, and that's not a comment on Santiago Espinal, but you know, I think if you're looking at sort of obvious places where you can get left-handed and some of the balance that we were just talking about, you know, I mean, that's one of the spots. And, you know, I would, you know, this is personal, you know, I know the Blue Jays have liked him in the past. I don't know if there's anything there, but, you know, Kyle Seager of the Mariners to me is makes so much sense in a number of different ways, especially if you don't bring Marcus Semien back. He brings some of the Marcus Semien, you know, off-field pieces, left-handed bat, you know, you'd like a little bit more batting average, but there's good OBP there. There's good pop there. There's plus defense. You know, that's somebody who could, you know, fit a bit of a need there. But, you know, Espinal definitely has a spot on this team, and Espinal is a guy you feel really good about if somebody goes down and has to play for, you know, a couple of months. But again, you know, there's still a relatively limited sample size of work there to base those decisions. And, you know, you think about, you know, track record and pedigree, you know, he's never been an elite offensive performer. Now, if you're given how good this lineup is, yeah, you can sacrifice some of the offense because of the level of defense that he provides for you. But I don't think that if you're the Blue Jays, you want to be in a position where you just commit, you know, 550 plate appearances to a guy who may not OPS 700 over the course of a full season. So I think that's some of where the challenge lies for the Blue Jays. In terms of, you know, or some of the challenge lies for a guy like Santiago Espinal is that, you know, he's going to have to really wait for an extended opportunity. You know, and as much as, you know, he performed well this year, to me, it's, you know, I wonder what the Blue Jays are seeing in the fact that, you know, they went out there and they said, okay, well, we got to, you know, we got to give Breivik Valera opportunities. And, you know, I mean, I know that Espinal was hurt, but, you know, like they went out and picked up a Jake Lamb to help paper over the gap. So, you know, those are telling about a little bit in terms of, you know, how the Blue Jays feel about Espinal, that they weren't ready to hand him the reins on an everyday basis.
Well, and they're not ready to hand it to Biggio either. I don't think, are they?
No. And, you know, he's got to earn that back at this point. You know, I think the Blue Jays want him to be in that super utility role. And, you know, the one thing, and I think the Blue Jays are maybe feeling like this a little bit at this point, but, you know, dumping third base on a guy who'd never played third base before for, you know, an extended basis, you know, it's really a lot to ask. You know, of all the infield positions, you know, I know shortstop is considered the most demanding, but in some ways third base might be the most difficult. Like you have, especially in the major leagues, the way the guys hit the ball, you know, the velocity that you're experiencing, you know, the spin and things of that nature that you have to field and work through. Now that's a really hard spot to play, and you have the least reaction time. And it was interesting. I was talking to Louis Rivera at one point, and he was saying, you know, if you're a third base and you're watching the pitcher throw the ball to the plate, you're already late. You're not going to have enough time to track it off the bat. So basically you have to see the pitcher in his windup. You have to turn to the plate at that point and wait for the ball to come off the plate then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how hard it is to play third base in the major leagues. And, you know, for a guy to get thrown into that at the big league level in a win now season and perform, you know, all things considered relatively well, you know, I think that's a credit to Kevin Biggio. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays put him in a very tough spot, and it was a factor in how his season played out.
Don't you think too, and Bob has talked about this before, depth in the infield is an issue they need to address.
You know, I think they had it, but, you know, like clearly, look, if they go into next season with, you know, Kevin Biggio on the bench and Espinal on the bench, you know, sort of in super utility roles with a new second baseman and a new third baseman, or Semien and a third baseman, whatever the case is, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Especially with Lopez and Groshans coming in the minors, you know, they're going to be okay. You know, Aurelvis Martinez, who is now their top prospect, or arguably with Gabriel Moreno, you know, those guys are, you know, two good factors. Like they're coming and they're going to bolster this team in, you know, two years or less. Moreno probably sooner than that. You know, I mean, that's going to help. So I don't think it's bad, but they definitely do have to backfill for 2022. especially again, you know, like your goal is to get better. And so, you know, they definitely do have some work to do there.
One of the reasons I asked it was last night in watching the Dodgers and the Cardinals, the Dodgers between outfielders and infielders had 16 guys on the roster. I mean, yeah. They had so many, they had so much depth that they could just put up pinch hitter after pinch hitter after pinch hitter. And, you know, Chris Taylor, who didn't even start the game and got the walk off. I mean, that's how deep you can be there. And it, you know, that I wonder if that's how you win 106 games as opposed to 91.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you could be the Dodgers, like everybody would sign that up to be the Dodgers, right? And look, I think the Blue Jays in an ideal world want to be the Dodgers. They want to be some sort of comp. They want to be sort of as efficient as the Rays with the depth of the
bring
Dodgers.
The money, baby. Bring right. The money, baby.
Look, and I think I think there's room to be that. But yeah, I mean, the you know, this is like one of the least sexy things any team can say. It was like, you know, this is where, you know, improving your 40-man roster comes in, right? And like nobody wants to hear that, but it's absolutely relevant. Like, you know, the Dodgers have as good a 40-man roster as anybody, as good as 26-man roster as anybody. But, you know, they just keep adding dudes and they're able to get buy-in because everybody wants to be there. And sort of, you know, that's in an ideal world, you know, that's how you get like a, you know, a Grichuk and a Dickerson, and you have Gurriel and Springer and Teoscar Hernandez in your outfield. Like, okay, well, now you're covered for any eventuality. Right. And so the Blue Jays need to get that there, get back there with the outfield, because, you know, obviously Dickerson's going to be a free agent and they're going to have some decisions to make there. And then they're going to, you know, get pushed further in that along those lines in the infield. And then you end up with this 26-man roster where you just have surplus everywhere. You know, that's what you want. And that's where the Blue Jays need to get to.
Yeah. And I'm going to make the case once again that Espinal has almost sold me. And I understand. You don't want a guy who's got one or two home runs playing third base. That traditionally doesn't work. But he plays very sound defense. He's got a great arm. I don't remember him making a bad throw to a really bad throw to first base. I mean, it probably happened. It happens to everybody. But he is sound defensively, and he gets big hits. They're not long. They're not far. They're not out of the ballpark. But he makes contact on a regular basis and hits a lot of line drives. And if you're going to have a hole somewhere, and this team is going to have a hole somewhere, because economically they can't bring everybody back. That's a place where I don't think there's a crisis. And you got Biggio, who can go there occasionally and give you a left-handed bat too, and put him in the lineup. And he's not horrible at third base either. So, but it brings me to this. We spend and have spent a lot of time talking about who you sign and re-sign, free agents, et cetera. Who is tradable on this team? Who are the pieces that you would be willing to give up to fill the other holes that exist? Not necessarily the bullpen, because I would never subscribe to trading any everyday player for a bullpen guy. Go find one on the street. They didn't do it this year. They couldn't find that guy, at least not until the second half of the season. And even then, it was not ideal. But most of the time, you can find those guys. You can cobble together a bullpen. And I trust they'll be able to do that. But who are you prepared to dangle out there as trade bait to use for the acquisition of somebody else? Grichuk is an obvious guy. Not that I don't like Grichuk. But at $10 million a year, guy can play all the outfield positions, decent arm, occasionally hits well. He'd be a tradable commodity, wouldn't he?
You know, I've heard different things about sort of what happened around the trade deadline. And, you know, the Blue Jays maybe having had a possibility to move Grichuk at the deadline and, you know, and ultimately deciding to keep him. You know, I'm not 100% certain what happened there. But I do think there'll be an opportunity to potentially move Grichuk. But I would think that's more sort of a, you know, you take my money for your money kind of deal.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is fine. And maybe that's a way you add, you know, a back end starter, or a way that maybe you add a leverage reliever or something along those lines. You know, and creatively, you know, move around some money essentially and reallocate. The other thing, you know, I think the Blue Jays are going to have to, if they're determined to sort of diversify the kind of hitters that they have and their handedness, you know, maybe they do look at, you know, moving someone like a Lourdes Gurriel Jr. or a Teoscar Hernandez. Like, outfield is an area of obvious surplus.
Yep.
But the other area too, you know, is catcher, right? You know, I mean, to me, I've long been, and maybe at points in the minority in this, but, you know, I think Danny Jansen, he's not going to have 1,000 OPS, but he's going to be more along the lines of the hitter that he was when he came back off the injured list for the second time there. You know, somebody who's productive, who can put charge into a ball periodically, who's going to give you a decent at bat. You know, that's more, that's who he's been in the minor leagues. You know, and it hadn't translated for an extended period in the majors, but to me, that's more of who he is. You know, I think he needs to be your guy behind the plate, at least, you know, to start. And, you know, you need to give, get to need to give him, you know, a legitimate big league backup, you know, someone who's, you know, maybe up the ladder a little bit from Reese McGuire. And then maybe Alejandro Kirk becomes, you know, a bit of a trade chip for you. You know,
you'd keep McGuire over Kirk.
I'd like to see them sort of get a better backup, you know, an established backup as opposed to, you know, bringing back Reese McGuire. But, you know, I think Kirk is the one guy who's going to get you a better return on the trade market. And, you know, I think the other thing the Blue Jays have to figure out is, you know, is Gabriel Moreno going to stay behind the plate longer term? And then is he your guy back there? Because, you know, eventually, if he's going to be eventually the guy, then, you know, you can pair him with Danny Jansen while he's transitioning, while he's getting ready for the big leagues, and you've got good protection. You've got a guy you can put in a big spot as Mourinho acclimates. But there's got to sort of be some succession planning there. And you can't continue to have four catchers on your 40-man roster.
No.
You know, it just jams you up there. It's bad 40-man roster construction. So, you know, I think you can get to three, but you've got to get to the right three. So, you know, to me, those are sort of the obvious areas where you could subtract from the big league roster, transform yourself a little bit, maybe get better, and just, you know, just set yourself up in a more efficient manner.
Well, with Kirk came out of nowhere, obviously we know that, and that doesn't happen all the time. Usually the progression is pretty much planned, but how long till Mourinho's ready? Do you think could he win a job next spring?
I don't think so at this point because, you know, he lost the time with the broken thumb this year. You know, if he hadn't broken his thumb, he would have been knocking on the door. You know, I think or next spring might have been aggressive, but it would have been at some point next year. You know, he's so talented as a hitter that he may still be able to push the line a little bit next year for a promotion. The thing that right now is going to, you know, impact his trajectory is just the defense, right? Mm-hmm. And just the experience of catching. And like, he's good, you know, the accounts that I've heard that he might be one of the best throwing catching prospects out there. And you know, he's got a chance to be a really good game caller, a really good receiver, but I mean, it just takes time, right? You can't fast track it. So yeah, I think that's sort of the challenge right now with Mourinho. But he's on the horizon and it seems like that's going to be real. You know, I think you can go back through the past 20 years and, you know, there's a long line of Blue Jays catchers of the future who weren't. And, you know, it's a long progression. One of them, the first in that list is managing the Tampa Bay Rays right now, Kevin Cash. But yeah, if Mourinho is the real deal, and you know the Blue Jays think that, then you know maybe now's the time to cash in on Kirk, turn him into something that's helping you in the moment, and knowing that you're going to have that piece coming.
So it wouldn't shock you if Kirk and McGuire were both involved in deals,
right? And you know, look, I don't think McGuire, you know, and this is no disrespect to him, but you know, I don't think the industry is going to value him as an everyday catcher. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays can use somebody who, you know, like, I don't think the Blue Jays would feel good. Like, he did a nice job this year, but I don't think the Blue Jays would feel good if they had to run with Reese McGuire for 2 months, you know, if something happened to Danny Jansen. And so I think the Blue Jays would do well to get a guy who, you know, they could run out there for an extended period if they needed. a veteran guy who can, you know, handle a staff and can bring a lot of the elements that that Danny Jansen brings to the field. You know, and that that might be a way to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, Danny Jansen, who may turn into, you know, a better player than a lot of people are expecting still. You know, I know everybody was ready to give up on him, and, you know, I think that's a mistake. I know that there are a lot of people who really believe in him as an offensive player, as well as the defender that he is. And, you know, the, and you've got Mourinho coming. So maybe that's the way you augment in other areas.
Shai, did the last 40 games mute any criticism of Charlie?
I mean, in certain sections of Blue Jays fans, no. It should.
Yes. You know,
I just think, you know, for whatever the faults are, you know, I think that you can, one, the discussion about Charlie as it's been, it's like every decision he makes turns into a referendum on whether he should be manager or not, which I think is gotten stupid.
Welcome to social media.
Right. But, you know, I think this, you know, that there are times, I think the one decision that I look at that, you know, I really didn't like was the one in that Tigers game when he, you know, put in Breivik Valera to bunt for Alejandro Kirk in a key spot in the ninth inning when, you know, Kirk was as hot as could be. And, you know, Valera, you're taking out a hot hitter to give away an out for 90 feet. You know, I think that's something that stuck with a lot of people. But, you know, okay, but like, is that a fireable offense? Is it, you know, the fact that he had to run, he had no choice but to run Joel Piamps and Anthony Castro and Jeremy Beasley and CJ Edwards and AJ Cole into leverage, you know, is that a fireable offense? I mean, you know, Dave Roberts wouldn't have done better with that. Kevin Cash wouldn't have done better. Scott Servais wouldn't have done better with that. Whoever you think is Bob Melvin, whoever you think is the greatest manager, you know, like, I don't know. Like the credit for this season always goes to the players, right? They grinded through three different homes, all the different challenging circumstances, the soul crushing, backbreaking losses that could have easily split them and sapped their will. And they fought through all that and put themselves in position to make the playoffs on the last day of the season. So full credit for them for that. But if you think the manager isn't playing a role in that, then you're blissfully ignorant and there's going to be no convincing you. So, you know, I mean, the reality is that the Blue Jays are going to extend Charlie Montoya at some point, either in the winter or in the spring, but that's coming on the horizon. You know, the coaching staff, as long as they want to return, are going to be back. You know, I think Pete Walker has already been extended. Some other deals have already been done, like Martinez, the hitting coach, is already under contract. So, you know, all that's going to get settled. You know, coaching isn't what cost this team this year. You know, it was, you know, personnel in a few spots. And it was, you know, some of it was circumstantial.
Before we let you go, I'm of the opinion that there is a very, very good chance that either Gurriel or Hernandez will be moved during the course of this offseason. I was going to ask you which you think is more likely, but you know, Hernandez has the bigger market value, correct? And yet, there are parts of Gurriel's game and what he showed in the last couple of months of the season that make him a very attractive player and maybe a guy who's just finding himself and figuring things out. First of all, do you concur that there's a real chance that one of those two will move?
You know, I think that that's very possible. And the Blue Jays have explored moving Gurriel the past few off seasons, right? So
yep.
this wouldn't be completely new. The thing with Teoscar Hernandez, so, you know, you said like Teoscar Hernandez has more market value, and he does in a degree, but I think there could be actually more teams that would take on Gurriel because he's going to be cheap. He's under control.
Well, there's another, that. Yeah.
So he's got a really good contract. So he's just under $5 million next year. He's just under $6 million the year after that. And then there's another year of arbitration before he's eligible for free agency. Okay. So you're getting 3 years of control with him versus 2 years with Hernandez. Hernandez is going to platform off $4.5 million in arbitration. He's going to end up probably in the area of $10 million. That's going to be an interesting case to see how they compare it, but you know, I think he's going to be in that area. So he's jumping to 10 million. And then if he performs again, you know, he's going to be maybe even double that or
double that,
significantly yeah. higher than that in his final year of arbitration. He's going to market. So, you know, that's a big ticket. Not everybody's buying that big ticket. So I think Gurriel is an interesting piece because of how he's going to fit for a number of different teams. And he's really interesting from a hitter's perspective because, you know, he brings a little bit of everything. He can hit you for average. He can hit for some power. You can put him in a number of different spots and roles in the lineup and he'll fit. So he's a real sort of Swiss Army knife type of offensive player. But I think if you're a buying team, you're going to say, well, you know, we've seen it in spurts. We don't see it over on 162. So what are we buying? So I think both of those deals are complicated for different reasons for the Blue Jays. And, you know, but I do think if you're going to transform yourself, that is an obvious area where you can transform yourself.
And I know we got to go, but just timeline for when are we going to start hearing about Ray and Semien and Matt's signings somewhere else? Is it December 1st? Is it January 1st? What do you think?
I mean, based on off seasons past, you would look at like late December, January, and then this year with the CBA, I mean, look, the CBA expires beginning of December. If that goes nowhere, then everything's going to freeze and seize up. So, you know, Semien is involved in he's on the union's executive subcommittee. He's going to be part of the negotiations. He's going to be very influential in how things play out. You know, Semien, I think Semien may probably take a lot longer. And Ray, look, he was the first free agent to sign last year. I think he understood that there was a good deal. He had an opportunity to pillow himself in Toronto. I think that's going to take a lot longer this time around because he's going to want to play it out. He's going to be one of the top dudes out there. So he's going to help set the market. So I don't think that it's going to be quick with either of those guys.
Davidi, always a pleasure. We thank you. And I know, as John said earlier, the baseball season is not over.
No, it's not. Three more weeks.
It is for the Blue Jays, but we hopefully will have an opportunity to chat many more times before the year is out. We thank you as always for your time. And always a pleasure. Thanks, pal.
A pleasure, guys. Talk soon.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. And we're back. And our thanks to Shai Davidi for joining us. It's always an interesting conversation. You know, I respect Shai immensely and disagree with him on many things.
Yeah.
Many, many things. But I'm not sure. I've never kept track of whether I've been more right than he has or the other way around.
Although he's got a pretty good pulse, Bob. He's got a pretty good pulse.
Oh, I get. Well, that's why we have him on. I mean, I love the guy. I really think that Hernandez or Gurriel is going to go. And
I wouldn't trade Hernandez. Not now. I mean, Bob, career year. I know
you.
And
you're
going
to have to. You're going to, John.
You know, you're going to have to get rid of somebody for
money. If you keep Semien, and I'm for that.
Yeah.
You're going to lose two starting pitchers, two left-handed starting pitchers, both very good. And those do not grow on trees. And to try and get another one that is competent, you're going to have to give up something on your roster. And it's going to have to be something significant. And at the same time, don't forget the economics. You're going to spend $25 million on Semien, and you've got Guerrero and Bichette coming up, and Hernandez could be a 20 plus million dollar guy in the not too distant future.
Yeah. In the last 2 years, I have been really, really conservative of how much money the Jays should spend and not really invest in anything during the pandemic. I got news for you. This is the fourth largest market in North America. Now's the time.
Well,
the time to start.
I have promoted a $300 million payroll.
But I look at the
But I don't think it's going to happen.
San Francisco's payroll, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, Toronto's that type of market. Toronto's that type of market.
Well, two it's things the have biggest, to happen.
You know, Rogers has to spend the money now. Now's the time.
Rogers has to spend the money, and then the fans are gonna panic because they're gonna see ticket prices go up by more than 50%.
Well, would you?
That's how that works.
Well, you know what? 52,000 in that stadium. I think it's when I moved to Toronto that every game was sold out, Bob. There's no reason to think it couldn't be sold out next year.
And I also know that the best seats in the house in 1977 were $7.50. They might be $7,500 next year if they sign everybody. And the Blue Jays promoted $15 ticket prices for this last.
Yes. Well, they've been around.
You ain't going to see that again.
Maybe for batting practice.
it's not so much about whether Rogers will pay. It's whether the fans will pay and whether Rogers thinks the fans will pay. Because at the end of the day, all that money is just simply a wash through to John Q. Public. We got to go. Have a nice day.
Baseball tomorrow. Evening.
More baseball tomorrow. Yeah. We'll hope to see you right here. Same time, same station. Goodbye, everybody.